cigarettes. A little
wasting air right now.
as we should.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of air to waste. What are you up to, Matt?
What am I up to? I don't know. It's going to be my birthday next week.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
What day?
It was just Mark's birthday. So
the 30th.
Wow. Oh, good.
Wow. Happy birthday to both of you.
Thanks. Cool people have birthdays in January.
Belated and early.
Oh, yeah.
Well, mine is at least a 30th. It's just not January 30th. So there's 6 degrees or 2 degrees.
You get the summer. Yeah, when I was growing up, there were a lot of birthdays in January. I remember. I don't know what it was, but, you know, just...
It's because
a lot of
people do it. anyway, is that a good way to start the show?
Sure, babies.
People do it.
People do it.
Birds do it too, I think, and bees.
Really?
Even elevator fleas. Yeah.
We'll have to have a podcast about that someday, Matt, where you tell us all about that.
Anyway, Criterion tonight.
On that note, Criterion After Dark.
After Hours, yeah.
But still kind of okay for kids. So this is Criterion Now, 44. We're starting out off, we're lit right now, as the kids say. So anyway, it's episode 44. It's our second of 2018, and I have two good friends. So I'll introduce you guys alphabetically, which is tricky with you guys.
It is.
You're pretty close, but I guess it's Mark and Matt. So Mark, Matt, hello.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Hello. I had to double check the alphabet to make sure you weren't screwing me over.
I won't be able to remember this. I'm going to discriminate. I'm sorry. So anyway, Mark, what are you up to?
Well, I've been watching a lot of movies. I got to thank MoviePass again. I've been putting it through its paces. And so I've been catching up with a lot of 2017 movies and some rewatches. So I rewatched both Mother and Get Out with my wife. Both were interesting watches for her. She was exhausted by the end of Mother. She was into it, but exhausted. She went right to bed. I can't blame her. I can just imagine what her dreams were like. And then Get Out was, she was definitely into, she said, for both movies, she said numerous times, this is weird. This is weird.
But, really? I guess Get Out is weird too, but yeah I just think of the two. Matt, what's up?
Well, I've been taking a little bit of a break, but we are halfway through the Kubrick filmography on my podcast, The Complete, and we are going to be recording 2001 with David Blakeslee next week. So that's going to be really exciting.
That'll be fun.
Has a few things to say about that movie. It's his favorite movie of all time. So
a few thousand things.
Yeah.
Good luck getting a word in, Matt. And I'm not teasing David. He actually did a commentary on 2001, and which I haven't listened to. I should.
He did. It's great. I'm hoping I'm able to cut it down to about 3 hours with editing.
It'll be longer than the movie for sure.
Yeah,
it will be.
Well, if there's any movie you can talk about a lot, it's 2001. So that's pretty much it. We did a year-end poll, best of Criterion on Considered, which was a lot of fun. And
boy, people love those polls, don't they?
Oh yeah.
Most people.
Well, most all but one apparently.
R.I.P. that one. Let's save that because we're going to talk about some best of the years in a minute, and that'll be a nice thing to add. So Matt Herney and Mark Gass.
Yes.
I might switch names.
It was going to happen.
Mark Herney. That was unintentional. Mark Herney and Matt Gassdyer. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
I usually don't check in with myself, but I have a shout out this week. So Keith Enright, I can remember his last name. He visited my town this week. So on Wednesday we went out and had a beer or three and some food. We were going to see a movie, but just the timing didn't work out. We were going to see, I think it's Felicite. I forget how you pronounce it. It's on the short list for Oscar. And it was showing our indie theater, but just the timing of getting off work. It was also like 15 degrees. And let me just say that he's from Minneapolis. And so I thought that he would be fine with the cold. But we were walking in my car, and he said, "Are we there yet?" So Keith, wow. Keith, you're on notice. And I said, "You're from Minneapolis. Why is this tougher for you?" And he said something about not enough clothing. I don't know, some excuse.
Is that why he wasn't smiling in the picture? He looked like an unhappy man.
Yeah, that was his picture pose. But anyway, we had a great time, and it was great to see Keith. It's been 3 years since I'd seen him, so it's good to see him.
That's great. Oh, I didn't realize you had met him before, so it's nice to hear that you got to meet Keith in real life, IRL.
Third time, actually. He comes to visit my town for work, so one of the few, not one of the few, the only one in our community that does that. So if you guys ever are here on work, I don't know, anything, feel free to call me up.
Of course.
So shall we talk some criterions, fellas?
Let's do it.
Is that what we're here to do? I always guess... forget every time I'm on the show.
I know. It's it's just movies now. All right. Well, kind of a big deal. We had the April announcements, and the 15th was Martin Luther King Day, so I think there was some suspense whether they would come out that day or the next. To me, there was really no suspense. I just didn't bother checking on Monday. Didn't expect it. I guess it would have been a nice surprise, but, you know, I had another thing. I was actually watching, The Shape of Water on Monday. So, anyway, so April 10th, they announced the Eclipse series. Welcome back, Eclipse. 46, Ingrid Bergman's Swedish Years. So this... And I say welcome back, Eclipse. I guess welcome back because we have another one that just came out.
Yeah, we're coming out Tuesday.
So, so at first glance, did either of you guys see this and think, what, a Bergman Eclipse? thinking about the Ingmar. I'm just going to toss it up because he asked me to. But no, it's Ingrid. It's her work from the 1930s mostly. I think there's a couple from the 1940s. So I'm just going to ask you, Matt, since you've seen everything, have you seen any of these?
I saw, is it June Night? Is that one of them?
June Night is the last one, 1940.
So I've seen that, but it was a really, really long time ago. I think it was on TCM or it might have even been AMC, a really long time ago. I haven't seen any of the other ones, though.
Yeah, I think I've seen Intermezzo, but... That's also the name of a cafe in Atlanta, so I may have just been to the cafe.
I think that's the most famous, is Intermezzo.
Seems to be,
I think I may have seen it, and I don't know if these are very good or not. Mark, do you know anything about these Bergman films? Ingrid.
I think you're right, though, with Intermezzo being the most well-known, because that's, I was looking at the dates, 1936, and then it was remade 1939, again, mm-hmm. starring Bergman and Leslie Howard, so... You know, and fairly well regarded, if you believe IMDb.
If you do, yes, and that's actually noted on the Criterion description is that Intermezzo is the movie that brought her to America. So I think it's notable for that. So, so we have another Eclipse, and this one is not from a Holocaust denier. So, as far as we know, I'm not going to put words in Ms. Bergman's mouth. But are you guys excited about the Eclipse series? Any thoughts or opinions?
Yeah, I mean, I just love, it's funny, my friend Keith pinged me because he's like, you know, he knows how excited I get for these obscure films that come out in these, you know, these collections. But I to me, it's just great to see it continue. We know that the Eclipse Viewer band plays on, you know, with Dave and Trevor, they'll have another set to talk about. And this is, I mean, 6 discs. The fact that it's going to be another one of those brick size of an Eclipse set is really great. So it still amazes me that the DVD format continues on. Although, you know, we do more and more, there are new films that are coming out in DVD only. They're not bothering to put it out on Blu-ray, some of the more independent new releases. So
true.
You know, a format that's came out in the mid 90s and it still continues. It's amazing.
Yeah, and some people actually complained about that. People complain about everything, that they're still coming out with DVDs. But that's kind of the gist. So, Matt, do you have any opinions about Ms. Bergman?
Oh, yeah. Well, I love her. I mean, I think this is pretty much what Eclipse was made for. This is the kind of set where, you know, these films probably aren't in the best of shape. but they're so essential to film history, and they're you know, the kind of thing that just should be on disc. As for the Blu-ray DVD thing, I think it's super silly. I do wonder if Blu-ray now, you know, it has been 10 years since Eclipse was introduced. I assume, considering there's lots of Blu-rays on Amazon for $4, I assume that the manufacturing price of a Blu-ray has dropped considerably since then. And I do wonder if they could afford to do it. And, it, you know, it becomes more of just an issue of the SD quality of what they have available to them, and you know, their inability to kind of put money into something that's not going to sell as widely, as opposed to kind of what it originally kept it in DVD as, this low cost manufacturing thing.
And manufacturing probably has dropped, but I think one reason we see a lot of $4, $5 DVD or Blu-rays is just because inventory has grown. So yeah. I think they print too much, and they have them, they have to unload them. Yeah, I agree. This is a great fit. This is probably not something I'd be excited for if they were like a standalone blue big deal box set. But I think for Eclipse, it's perfectly fine. I like the fact, and a number of people have pointed this out, that the color scheme is consistent with both the Bergman documentary and also the Bergman Rossellini box set. So they, and, you know, if you want to,
it's really cool,
alphabetize by actress, by lead actress subject, you could do that, and it would look fine. Or I don't know anybody that would organize their collection by that, but you never know. But it's still neat. And then another thing to point out is we had some confusion about the newsletter clue, and I think this one puts that top left New Year's Eve drawing clue to rest, because that, if you remember, there was a moon, there was a lady, and there was a flag that looked like it might be Swedish, might be some other Scandinavian country. And, of course, we all leaped, and there were conspiracy theories that it was Ingmar Bergman, and I think I helped fan those a little bit. But do you guys agree that's probably this, and they just got it out of the way?
Yeah, and that's an eclipse, not a moon.
Right, yeah. Did I say, yeah, well.
No, you know, I'm just saying, like, we thought maybe it was a moon, but pretty clear here that was intended to reference that this is an eclipse set.
Yes, lest anybody point out that eclipses are moons. Any astronomy buffs out there. All right, well, that is Eclipse. It continues on. And so we'll move along. So the Eclipse is April 10th, and then April 17th, we have two releases. We have The Awful Truth and The Color of Pomegranates. So let's start with The Color of Pomegranates. Sergei Parinajanov, is that okay?
That's really good. I'm impressed, Aaron.
Maybe I'll make my own opening credits. So this is the famed Russian film. And by the way, I should say none of these were surprises. I think we all expected these to come out at some point. So this one was very much expected. It was on the newsletter. It was on the, I think it's been hinted at. We know there's a restoration out there. Actually, there's a overseas release, a UK release. It's actually pretty amazing. It's a Film Foundation restoration. And it's... it's supposedly a beautiful film. One, I think it's on the Sight and Sound 250.
It is. So yeah, it's also on the Criterion Channel as well.
But I think somebody mentioned they tried that. It might have been on the show. They looked at it and it was not the rest. It didn't. Wasn't the restored version. I could be mistaken on that. But this one will be.
I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So, have either of you guys seen this?
I haven't. No.
I have not. It's been very hard to see in a good quality. And so the first time it was available was on the Criterion Channel when they uploaded it. And that pretty much guaranteed that it was going to be getting a release. And so I decided that I would just wait for the disc.
I did the same thing. And in fact, I doubled down on this as a blind buy, because this one's so buzzed about and I think it'll be up my alley. I actually, when I saw the features... the supplements, they're really great, but I the UK version, I can't remember who put that out. Was that BFI or
Second Sight?
Second Sight. It's a double disc edition, and it's kind of amazing, actually. So I went ahead and bought the I had a gift card, so I bought the UK version, and I'm probably going to buy the Criterion as well. So I hope it doesn't suck.
I only bought the UK version. I may end up breaking down and getting the Criterion just for the Tony Raines commentary, but I was even thinking I'd just get it from the library or something and then just listen to the to the commentary at some point. The UK version just looks pretty awesome. It's got the censored version of the film, which is shorter, and it's got commentary on the censored version, which I assume will be fascinating just in terms of, you know, why they cut what they cut. And it's got this massive book as well, so looks pretty good.
I think also it has commentary or annotated commentary by James Steffen, and he's featured on the Criterion. I don't know him as a scholar. I'm sure he knows a lot about the film and the artist, but I think it's interesting that they have like featurettes with him on the Criterion, whereas it's a full commentary. I wonder if they're both the same thing.
And it's the reverse for Tony Raines. Tony Raines is on the supplement on the UK version, and he does a full commentary on the Criterion version.
Mm-hmm. And there's also a 100-plus page book on the limited edition. So as far as shelf appeal, I guess the UK edition looks pretty amazing. But I think it's going to be pretty nice to have on Criterion.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what we get for just more information about this, because I wonder if this will, the Criterion, I mean, since it's just announced, will it actually, maybe it will include both cuts, and maybe it'll be a digipack, maybe include a booklet to kind of compare to the second site. But boy, I don't know, you guys are selling me on putting in a pre-order for the second site version. It sounds amazing.
It's not usually what we do on this show, but and the one thing, if there's going to be more supplements, they have more on the description, so I think this might be it, probably is it, but either way, still looks to be quite a release, and the film has a great reputation, so I am looking forward to it. The next one coming out the same day is The Awful Truth, Leo McCarey's 1937, I guess, screwball comedy about divorce. It seems like they talked about divorce a lot in the 30s. That seems like a risque subject, but I keep seeing films about that. I also should mention, I didn't realize this at the time, because Criterion has not been crediting their artwork or their artists, but our friend Caitlin Kuwald did this cover. And
cool.
She, in fact, we talked about it. She tweeted about it, and then we talked. And it was a rush job, and she was just shocked to see it come out so quick. So I think that might give you some indication on the production cycle. So this one has some comment. Well, Matt, have you seen The Awful Truth?
Yeah, I love this movie. It's a lot of fun. It's definitely one of the better screwball comedies, I think. And it was made the same year as the other McCarey Criterion Make Way for Tomorrow, and he actually won Best Director for this movie, and mm-hmm. when he received the Oscar, he thanked them but told them that they gave him the award for the wrong movie, because Make Way for Tomorrow was long his favorite film that he made. But I kind of agree with the Academy. They're both spectacular movies.
Really?
Make Way for Tomorrow is sort of the more prestigious and very extremely moving film. But An Awful Truth is just what Hollywood does best, I think. And, and it's just so perfectly executed. It's a really fun movie.
I think that's fair. I think I would pick Make Way for Tomorrow, so I agree with McCarey. But screwball comedies were right up their alley back then. So there's an interview with a new interview with Gary Giddens about McCarey. There's an essay by David Cairns about Cary Grant. There's an audio interview, which might make a good podcast. And there's a theater adaptation, which also might make a good podcast, if you know how to do that.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's a 4K restoration. So, and this is another... Actually, so far, we're 3 for 3 on newsletter clues from the New Year's drawing. So they're just getting those out of the way. So, Mark, any thoughts about McCarey and His Awful Truth?
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I love Make Way for Tomorrow. That just gobsmacked me when I saw it. So I didn't realize this was the same year. So it'd be interesting to see the two. Yeah, the role that defined the Cary Grant persona per the website. So, can't wait.
Yeah, I will say that this is not as gobsmacking as Make Way for Tomorrow. it's a lot, well, not a lot, it's just a tad lighter, quite a bit lighter.
Yeah.
But still, yeah. So that's why it's tough to compare the two, yeah. Which makes it an interesting quandary for the Academy.
Yeah, it's like champagne versus Isla Scotch, basically.
I wonder if it's one of those where they kind of thought of gave them the award for both films, even though they had to pick one. I don't know how Oscar campaigns worked in 1937, but so we also have coming out on April 24th, we have another two films. We have The Virgin Suicides and Dead Man. So again, two newsletter clues. So our New Year's Eve drawing clues. So these are no surprises. I have too many tabs open, guys. So The Virgin Suicides, we knew this was coming in a lot of ways, but now we absolutely know it's coming. So this is the feature debut of Sofia Coppola.
It is.
And this has her, I guess, her debut short film, which is Lick the Star from 1998. And it has a video from Air from Playground Love, the song Playground Love. I know you're a big music guy, Mark. I'm going to do this. Do you like Air?
Yeah, I like Air, especially this era. Playground Love is a great song. And they did the soundtrack for Virgin Suicide, so that's why they're included here.
Right. Yeah. This is around Moon Safari era, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think Playground Love was a single. I don't think it was on Moon Safari.
Okay. So I actually don't remember. We've talked about this a few times, and I saw it back in the day, and I remember liking it, but I remember very little from it, you know, other than, I guess, yeah, other than I remember it. Kirsten Dunst, I guess. I think she had been the vampire, so this was one of her first grown-up roles, I guess. Mark, do you have any opinions on the Virgins or Suicides?
Virgins are fine. Suicides, not so good. But no, I haven't seen it. I actually was getting it from the library and then just decided to wait because I haven't seen the film. I was just going to watch it on Criterion. But I do like the fact that they have included, I mean, especially with the Air soundtrack, a 5.1 mix. So definitely like to see those releases from Criterion. So yeah, looking forward to it. Interesting how we'll talk about it in a second, but we're pairing two 90s movies released on the same day. So glad to see it. Can't wait.
Yeah, I wonder if there's anything to that. Should also add that they have new interviews with Coppola, Ed Lachman, who I think he teased this as well, or he was at the Criterion Collection. Kirsten Dunst and Josh Hartnett, who's not been pining for Josh Hartnett all these years. And then Jeffrey Eugenides, who did he write this? I didn't know that. I know of him as an author, but anyway, The Virgin Suicides.
Well, it's based on a novel, right? Is it his novel? I don't know.
Must be.
It is.
Yeah, I think it would have to be. Otherwise, I guess other novelists do chime in. But yeah, so I don't know if there's a lot of excitement about this one, but I think people, it's probably like Election, you know, people are like, okay, it's a decent movie, we'll watch it. A little more excitement about Jim Jarmusch's Dead Man. And by the way, I will begin by saying that there is the more exclamation point here, so we are going to have probably a full release here. So this is I guess you'd call it an acid western. Is that fair, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jarmusch style, with Johnny Depp, and yeah, it's one of those that's impossible to describe. Just, you know, it's Johnny Depp, Neil Young soundtrack, and it's Robbie Mueller, a cinematography. So, yeah. Mark, have you seen Dead Man?
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's one of those movies. I think maybe more than any other Jarmusch, where the opening just grabs you. It's one of my favorite openings I've seen in some time. So it's, yeah, Neil Young fan, love the soundtrack. Definitely. I think Depp fits the role too of William Blake. I wasn't quite sure about that at first, but I think he just slides right in there well, and it is gorgeous. I think it's going to be another one of those that we'll get our inky blacks on Blu-ray, like we like to say. I think mm-hmm. it's going to look great. So, and lots of new. I think I have the original Blu-ray, and I think it had a dearth of supplements. So the fact that Criterion is doing a lot of new supplements makes sense, because I don't think there was much out there before. So it's great. Can't wait.
And they did the new Q&A with, and as you all remember, I'm sure you got the email, they asked for us to send our questions in. Did either of you guys send any questions in?
No.
No? Okay, well then. Yeah. All right. Hopefully there's some good questions other than, hey, is Johnny Depp cool?
This was when Johnny Depp was still good, right? Before he died and was replaced by the... the joke from BoJack Horseman? He's replaced by somebody else. This is when he was still doing interesting work. I mean, this is a kind of a no-brainer. I bought the Blu-ray for $5 last summer, so there you go. You're welcome.
$5. not a huge investment.
No, not a huge investment. Yeah, I mean, both of these movies are no-brainers for the collection. Well-regarded directors with works with followings. So, neither one of them gets me super excited. Dead Man more than Virgin Suicides, but on a personal level, but in terms of Criterion releases, they totally make sense. I was interested to see that they put these out, not just on in the same month, but on the same day.
Yeah.
Last month was such an obscure month other than Age of Innocence. It was such like it didn't seem like a blockbuster month for them. And so the fact that they kind of consolidated these two together was a little surprising to me, but such is the whims of a production schedule, I'm sure.
Yeah. Kind of like,
I'm sure that
kind of like February with Silence of the Lambs and Night of the Living Dead coming on the same day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Although I have a feeling I know what we're doing that. So there's just saying there's a flash sale coming up probably usually in February. So that's probably going to be around the timing of those two releases. There's also readings of William Blake poems by members of the cast, which, you know, to be honest with you, doesn't thrill me too much. But I do like that they're doing more commentaries these days.
Yes.
For a while they had stopped that. So there's a new selected scene commentary from Robert Ziembicki, who's the production designer, and then sound mixer Drew Coonan. So not exactly Johnny Depp, but I'm sure they'll have some insightful things to say. And I think sound and production is very interesting for this film. And then some other supplements and more, of course, as we mentioned. So I guess that's it, isn't it? Wow.
I was looking at the Blu-ray, and I think it's actually had a number of releases, but this one that I have is from Echo Bridge. It's actually paired with Texas Rangers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it does include, it had outtakes and deleted scenes and a Dead Man theme music video, so a Neil Young video. So that's all it had. So we're getting a lot of goodies here. So time to get rid of that $5 Blu-ray, I think.
So one thing I try to do, and I sometimes remember, is ask the community which release they're most excited about this month, and this was actually kind of close. This month they chose The Awful Truth as first, but The Color of Pomegranates was a close second by a couple votes, and then Dead Man was right behind it. And in fact, if I remember, I think when the poll first started, Dead Man was near the top. And then The Virgin Suicides and The Eclipse Version did pretty well, all things considered. I think we probably got, I don't know, maybe 150 votes total, maybe not that many. So I guess I'll just ask you guys, which release are you most excited about? So, Mark?
I'm going to go with Color of Pomegranates because I haven't seen it, and it just sounds amazing and interesting. So that said, I probably would actually, I mean, if you can count a release of the Eclipse series, that typically tops my month. So actually I'm changing my vote. The Swedish Years.
Okay. It's changed. Yep. All right. I'm going to do this all day. Matt.
Well, I would pick Color of Pomegranates, but I bought the UK version. So I would go with Awful Truth. That's the only one of these that I am definitely going to buy. I think the reason it's so close is because these are all solid releases, but there's no sort of blockbuster, insanely amazing release this month. That's okay. It's still a solid month overall, but it's kind of like a straight across the board seven or eights as opposed to 110 and a bunch of sixes and fives.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, I think I'm going to, well, even though I haven't seen it, I think The Color of Pomegranates is a pretty big release just because it's of its stature and So I haven't seen it, so it may be terrible, and I might be completely wrong. But I think that's, even though I bought the UK version, I'm most excited for that one because it's the one the big one I haven't seen. And then I'd say The Awful Truth. I just love that they keep doing the classic Hollywood, and they're doing good releases for them. So
come on, bringing up Baby.
Yeah, boy. Yeah. Somebody said that is not grounded in realism.
Well, there have been no concrete rumors, but it's a strong possibility.
Yeah, it's one you can piece the clues together. So another thing we do with the Criterion Now group is we have people make predictions, and usually, like I think last month they were all completely off because we had, as your friend Keith would say, a lot of obscure releases. This month, I'll just read off the top three. Number one was Dead Man, number two was The Color of Pomegranates, and number three was The Virgin Suicides. So I think we were pretty much on par. I will say that there was there were two votes for, or actually three votes for The Awful Truth.
Two of those people are liars.
Yeah. Actually, I have proof. We had a little... Matt claimed that he was the only one that called The Awful Truth, and he was right. Which ones did you pick, Mark?
I missed it. I missed the voting, so my vote doesn't count in this case.
Well, I'll just read off a couple of the other ones. There was Bringing Up Baby, The Other Side of Hope, so we know those are coming. Mirror, they called it The Mirror. I think it's just Mirror, isn't it?
It goes back and forth, yeah. It's weird.
Grand Budapest Hotel and Tree of Life, I think, which will make every poll until they come out. Memories of Underdevelopment, Written on the Wind, Harold Lloyd, I think that one's been on every month. Dragon Inn, which I don't know what happened to Dragon Inn. Then Notorious, Celine and Julie, yeah, and then a few others. And yeah, some guys voted The Awful Truth. The Devils, yeah, don't see that coming. And then three films by Christian Mungiu. Somebody had the gonads to throw that up there. So actually, I did vote for that, and I changed my vote afterward. So that's 2018. That's April of 2018. I'm here just, let's just end the year right now.
Might as well.
Not a terrible idea, actually. So anyway, well, speaking of 2018, let's reverse and go into 2017 a little bit. So Mark and I talked about our year-end favorites on our year-end show back in December. So Matt, did you want to share your favorite criterions of last year? And you might as well share the considered ones as well while you're at it.
Sure. I'll run down the considered ones real quick. There were not really a lot of big surprises here. The best upgrade was Rebecca. The best cover of the year was a little surprising to me. It was Stalker, which was kind of a controversial cover, but it really ran away with it on the site, which was interesting. I guess it's a real love it or hate it cover for people. Mm-hmm. Best overall package was Olympics. Best movie of the year, we split up into U.S. and non-U.S. And so the U.S. was Barry Lyndon, non-U.S. was Stalker. Best box set was Before Trilogy, and then the release of the year was the Olympic films with Stalker in second place, which I thought was funny because Before beat Olympics for best box set, but then the release of the year was Olympics.
It's not really a box set, it's a brick, right? So it's a difference, I guess.
So you're saying the internet is not consistent,
yeah,
Matt?
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So what about you? I have a feeling I know which one you're going to say, but do you have a favorite of the year?
I do. I'm nothing if not consistent, and halfway through the year, I thought it was going to be my release of the year, and it did not change. The World Cinema Project 2 was my release of the year. I loved every movie in it. I thought it was a great package of films, and bested the original in every way. And I got another Yang on Blu-ray, so there's nothing to complain about there. So that definitely was my release of the year. The other two that stood out to me were Good Morning and Tampopo. Good Morning, I think.
You're so predictable.
I am. Good Morning had the best cover, I thought, of the year. Was also the best reissue with the great addition of I Was Born But in HD and some really great supplements there. The David Cairns visual essay was really spectacular. And Tampopo, I just love and don't feel like it's getting quite enough love at the end of the year. I waited for 15 years for them to release this movie, and they put it out in a perfect package. It looks like it was made yesterday on the Blu-ray, and it's really great to have that in my collection. So those are my big three from the year.
Predictable, but they're pretty much all.
Well, we talked throughout the year, so maybe this year I'll throw you some subterfuge and really.
Oh, really? You're gonna play me?
Yeah, I'm gonna be like, I don't know, Virgin Suicides. It might be my number one.
Yeah. Okay. Like I said, you're predictable. I'm not buying that for a second. Also, Criterion Forum, they do their annual best of releases, and I like the way they do theirs, even though. Sometimes that forum's a little crazy, but they picked for best release. They picked Barry Lyndon number one, and then Stalker, Othello, then WCP, and then their 10th was 100 Years of Olympic Films. We'd mentioned before, I can't remember which show, but how insane it was that people were voting that the most worthless release, yeah. I forget the category. Most unnecessary, but that actually turned out to become Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, and David Lynch, The Art Life, was tied. But best box set was World Cinema Project, and then best materials, or I guess packaging, I forget the way they word it, was 100 Years of Olympics. And then cover, they had They Live By Night was the best, and worst was Election. And I've come around on Election. I already talked about it, but I kind of like how annoying it is. And one of the categories I like that they do is Best Discovery. Oh, and I'm sorry. I said Best Packaging was Olympics. It was actually Blow Up, which is, I love Blow Up, but that's pretty baffling. Mm-hmm. And then Best Discovery is, you know, the new discoveries of the year. And they had The Breaking Point, which I think is a good choice. Although they, most flawed release, again, speaking of consistency, Stalker. So, Criterion Forum is perplexing.
I wonder if that's for the supplement, lack of supplements.
I don't know. I didn't read. You know, people vote. It's just a forum, and you can see their commentary. I didn't read through to see all the justifications, but and I think the cover was controversial. I think you're right, Matt. So maybe that bothered some people. Anyway, well, I guess we can move on.
Back to 2018.
We are back to and we're actually back to now, so we can stop living in the past and the future and live right in January 2018. So we'll just get into some news items and new releases. So I'll just go through all of January. We already had The Breakfast Club, which I'm sure Matt loves.
Whoa, what's that? I like The Breakfast Club. Hold on.
Okay.
I hate 16 Candles. I like The Breakfast
Club. See, you're not predictable, Matt. Then this week we had Young Mr. Lincoln and I, Daniel Blake. Oh, I'm sorry. This past week was Young Mr. Lincoln, and then it's coming. Actually, I'm sorry, the week prior to that, but I think everybody's was delayed, was Young Mr. Lincoln, and then this past week was I, Daniel Blake, or Amazon delayed release of shipment of Young Mr. Lincoln for some reason. And then this week is Eclipse 45, Claude Autant.
I'm impressed by your
four
French,
romantic escapes from occupied France. You liked my rolling of the R. You want me to do that again?
Absolutely. Actually, I think you kind of rolled the L, which was awesome. That was great.
I think I have some phlegm in the back of my throat that just made a podcast appearance. And then next week we have the two by Pabst. And by the way, I can't remember how. I think it was Alexa or either Siri pronounced Kamerageschaft in a very, very funny way. Try it at home, kids. Mm. And then there was West Front 1818. So those will be a fun pair. Fun. Quotes fun. Probably not that pleasurable. So I'll start with you. I'll go reverse alphabetical. Matt, what are your thoughts about the January slate upcoming or just released?
To your surprise, I probably will buy Breakfast Club at the flash sale.
Wow.
it's a good release. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Shut up, haters.
And it's a movie that I can watch with my wife and will eventually show to my kids. So after a stern talking to about stereotypes.
So they can tell you how terrible you are as a parent.
Yeah. And I will be checking out the Pabst films. The West Front 1918 extras look really interesting. There's a bonus documentary from the 70s interviewing World War I veterans after seeing the movie. So I think that that sounds really cool. The Holocaust denier eclipse set, I could take or leave, but I will be watching those. I'll just be watching those on Filmstruck. I'll see how it goes. But I've not heard great things about them, so I'm going into them with lowered expectations.
I think I might watch those with Mark and or with Mark. See, I can't keep people straight today. With David and Trevor when they tackle the, we talk a lot about, especially nowadays, we talk a lot about separating the art from the artist. And you know, I can forgive some things. Holocaust denying is tough, especially if it's from around that time during occupied France. Mark, any thoughts on the January releases?
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, one thing I'll say is I. Maybe it's easier for me to separate the, you know, the artist from the art, because I just coloring, watching a film with that kind of lens, I always find a little interesting. So looking forward to that eclipse set. I think the two Pabst films are definitely the two that I'm the most excited for this month, because they just seem like a nice pair, and I haven't seen them. And the I, Daniel Blake was good, not great, Loach to me. Young Mr. Lincoln, I'm just going to probably wait for the flash sale. And the Breakfast Club was did well. I showed that to my daughter a couple Fridays ago. She liked it. She's more of a fan of 16 Candles, Matt. So, yeah.
Well, there's your target market there.
Exactly.
There's your demographic. So how was it? I kind of warned you when I rewatched it that it might be a little awkward watching it with your daughter.
It was fine. I mean, she's pretty. She's got a really good head on her shoulders, and of course, you know, maybe she didn't voice something she was feeling, but I think she is not really to the point of these kids yet. I mean, they're in high school. She's not an angsty teen, so I think that's why she took to 16 Candles more. And I still think, you know, I know in the interviews. That Molly Ringwald, she didn't want to be typecast in a film like, you know, 16 Candles or Pretty in Pink, but I think those roles work better for her. I think it kind of fits her as an actress better. And this film, she's just not. She's good. She really is good. She's not quite as believable, I think. So, but good movie.
Yeah. Ten years from now, Maria's going to rewatch it and be like, oh man. Yep. The Herney family, terrible. I'm kidding. Did you watch the Molly Ringwald or listen to the Molly Ringwald extra?
Yeah, some of it. Yeah, we checked out, or I was listening to some of that. We haven't watched the deleted scenes yet, so we'll have to revisit those. But
first off, they're basically VHS quality because they're not they didn't produce them. So I watched maybe the first 10-15 minutes, and that was plenty. All right, well, let's get into some news things or goings about. We had a AMA from this guy named Paul Thomas Anderson, who's pretty big deal.
That guy.
And not all AMAs are great on Reddit, but I'd say that he's a pretty cool customer. And so there is some Criterion news. People asked him about Hard Eight, and then people asked them about just Criterion in general. And so Hard Eight, he gave kind of a vague response, basically like, hey, I'm going to get to it. And then for Criterion, he said nothing in the works that, you know, nothing that he's actively working on. So that's a bummer. But I'll start with you, Mark. Did you read the AMA? I would ask you if you like PTA, but I think I know that answer.
You know, that's the case. No, I haven't read through yet. I'm actually checking it out now to try to find some of the news, but I didn't.
What about you, Matt?
I avoided it. I haven't seen Phantom Thread yet, so I just ignore directors until I've seen their latest film.
You just ignore them. You put them on mute on Twitter.
Yeah.
Ignore Aronofsky too, probably then. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't listen to the Filmstruck podcast with him for that very reason. I mean, it would be nice to have more of his films on Criterion. His early stuff, I think, he's reluctant to talk too much about Magnolia. You know, and Boogie Nights is basically all of that stuff was ported over to the DVD. So we've seen it all of the Laserdisc stuff before. You know, the one I'd really want is There Will Be Blood. but it doesn't seem like they're going to give that up anytime soon. So
maybe
in 10
years.
Seller.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you there. I'm not crying about not having PTA. We have plenty of PTA elsewhere. One thing speaking of Magnolia and speaking of him being a cool customer, I think one of the questions was, what would you tell yourself if you saw Magnolia and you know, had to edit or something? And he said, cut 20 minutes and chill the fuck out, which I thought was a pretty good self-aware thing. And he said the film he was most proud of was The Master. I think that might have been colored by Timothy Chalamet had called that out, and the specifically the scene where they were processing on the boat, which I agree is a great scene. And as we have talked about before, sometimes artists' favorite work is their most recent too. So I'm sure Phantom Thread is on his mind. And by the way, it was pretty easy to read without being spoiled about Phantom Thread. I just skipped any questions that that had that topic in them, and it was fine. So anyway, we had another guy that I think you know of, Matt Flylo. Is that how they go? Flyo or
Flylo? Yeah, Flying Lotus. Yeah,
yeah, Flying Lotus. So that shows how uncool I am. So Flying Lotus had a closet video. So I'll go to you, Matt. What's your take on Flying Lotus?
Cosmogramma is his record from 2011. That would be in my top 10 of the decade if I was making a top 10. I think it's one of the best records of the new century. He's great. You know, I love his work. I haven't seen Cuso. I hear it's just horrifying on multiple levels. So I'm really curious to see it. But he was awesome in this, and I would totally want to hang out with him. And he picked, you know, it's funny how like much people pick exactly the movies that you expect them to pick when they go into these places, into the closet. Like, and the fact that he pulled out Jellyfish Eyes and hadn't seen it, I was just blown away by. Like, I couldn't believe that he hasn't seen that movie, especially, like, I looked at the poster for Cuso, and I was like, this guy liked Jellyfish Eyes.
Yeah, well, and I would love to hear what he thought about it, because as you remember, Sean Baker picked that, hadn't seen that. And I think that actually comes up a lot. And Sean Baker didn't say anything bad about it, go on record, but I think that's what he said. I think he said he was taught not to say anything bad about anything, so he just left it there. Mark, is Fly Low on your radar?
No, not at all. And I was actually listening to his music yesterday. I guess, Matt, how would you classify him? I mean, because I was thinking, you know, I heard some jazz, some fusion. I saw him compared with some trip hop artist. I mean, what would you call him?
Yeah, all that stuff is accurate. I mean, okay. I think I do sort of fundamentally think of him as a hip hop producer, kind of in the line of like DJ Shadow. You know, so there's definitely like electronic leanings, and then he works a lot with jazz musicians as well to like layer in bass and other instruments into his samples and other electronic instruments that he's using. So, you know, I don't want to be like a douche and say post-genre or something like that, but I do feel like that's where a lot of that kind of music is headed. And it's just, you know, he's basically just putting out compositions that he thinks are cool.
I can't wait for all the hashtag Matt sounds like a douche comments.
Oh, no.
Now I made it a reality. One thing Matt famously said, rock is dead on an episode of ours. Flying Lotus is a huge Radiohead fan, just putting that out there.
I am a huge Radiohead fan, but Radiohead has been around for 20 years.
Good point.
Good point. They have been, but they're still fresh. Still making good music.
Let me take this moment to rephrase what I was saying. Rock has forfeited its position as an avant-garde genre. There you go.
Okay. That's fair. Well, I think Flying Lotus has co-opted and is like the next generation of rock music. I think they're, yeah. So anyway, that's a debate for another time. And actually, it's a debate we already had. So.
The next music episode.
Might as well. So Berlinale. That sounds like a new kind of craft beer.
Oh, yeah.
Berlinale had their Really, this is the first classic lineup to debut in 2018. So they had seven restorations to celebrate their world premieres, the Berlinale Classics. I can't remember when the festival is happening, but they have some restorations. So this is fun. We have Wings of Desire, which we already have. Let's see. We have Failsafe. Has that come out in the U.S.?
It's only on DVD. Yeah. We actually talked about that on our Dr. Strangelove episode for Complete. Because it was
really
released in
movie.
The same year.
Yeah, and we do have, I think it works well with Seconds, which is in the collection.
Yeah.
Speaking of in the collection, we have The Cranes Are Flying. And I think it was a show or two ago, I couldn't remember how to pronounce Kalatazov's name. So there you go.
Is.
But I love this movie.
Yeah.
And I do forget the name of the lead actress. Tatiana something is amazing. She passed recently. Hopefully this means upgrade coming. I love this film. Very, very heart-wrenching. Gut-wrenching, I should say.
And gorgeous. Will look great on Blu-ray.
Yes, like you like to say, Marcos, inky blacks. Yeah. And there was also Tokyo Twilight by this guy named Ozu that you might have heard of.
Overrated.
And we got to introduce him to Matt. He's it's time.
Yeah. Since I know what Matt's opinion is because he's so predictable, Mark, do you have any opinions of this slate?
Yeah, I mean, it looks great. I haven't seen Tokyo Twilight. I know it's in the late Ozu set, so a new restoration. I wonder what that means for that. I noticed that for Wings of Desire, it's a new 4K, and they're, of course, doing it in DCP, and it says it's coming to German studios from Studio Canal, so... Always concerning to see them as the distributor, but hopefully that doesn't mean anything for the Criterion.
If you don't own it, you might want to get it just in case.
I think it's a separate deal because I mean they have a pretty strong relationship with whoever the holder is of the Wim Wenders catalog. The Wings of Desire Blu-ray is sparkling and beautiful.
They're touring.
There's no reason to replace that Blu-ray. It's a great Blu-ray. You know, this to me is just future-proofing. They did a 4K scan, which is great, but they definitely do not need to replace that Blu-ray.
It's probably the same one they're touring, or they toured as part of the retrospective of Wenders, because that was after. So I think maybe just they're trying to program interesting films, and they succeeded. Not all of these mean they're coming to Blu-ray. So what do you think about Tokyo Twilight, since we talked about Eclipse and the Blu-ray conversation?
I don't see that they would upgrade that. I mean, especially since there are already really, really beautiful 4K restorations on Blu-ray in Japan of the color films in the late Ozu set, or at least of Late Autumn and Equinox Flower, the two Shochiku films, which are really beautiful, and I do recommend anybody get them. They're Region A and really great, but I don't see why they would release this movie and not those. So to me, this would be great to see on the big screen or something, but I don't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
This is Mark. This is his most, I think, unique post late spring film. It's his noir film, basically. I called it Ozu's Mildred Pierce on the Eclipse series that we.
I could see that.
It's definitely worth seeing. Some people are obsessed with this movie, but I think it has its flaws.
Some of them run together, but I think this is the really dark one. Am I right?
Super
dark. Okay. Yeah. This is actually, it is amazing. How great would it be if they just took all the films from Leto Zoo and made a Blu-ray
box set? Stop.
Hey, I said how great. I wasn't saying it was happening. I was asking how awesome that would be. Not happening though. At least not right now. Maybe 10 years. And then there's another, well, this is no surprise, but Janus Films is distributing Abbas Kiarostami, 24 frames.
You're killing it with the pronunciation today, Aaron. I'm impressed.
I did not study, well, that one I did study, but 24 frames is his final film. Unfortunately, yeah. Sadly, we've lost him, and I haven't seen it. I don't even think it's been distributed here in America.
No,
it?
It's being distributed by Janus.
I think this is it, yeah.
Yeah.
So, they bought the rights.
So, which is great. That means it'll see a theatrical distribution. It's probably, and I think it's safe to say it'll be on Criterion Blu-ray. Might be a while. I think especially a big film like this, they might want to get some mileage out of the theaters.
Yeah.
So I would ask if either of you seen it, but I know the answer.
Just excited.
What do you think about
that? This seems kind of like a perfect film to end his career, because it does mix his other love as a photographer, just mixing the two art forms, film and photography. So I think it'll be a nice capper for him. So I hope to see it soon.
Have you guys seen a lot of late Kiarostami?
Yeah. Well, I love Certified Copy. I think it's spectacular. And Like Someone in Love was also really great. His 2000s work is really interesting. I haven't seen all of it, but it's a lot more experimental than those last two films. I think this is kind of supposed to be somewhere in the middle. They tweeted out a great quote from him, Janus did, or Criterion, about this movie, saying that people don't see the life that is all around them unless it's in a frame. And I think that pretty much sums up most of his career in a lot of ways. I would love to see basically all of his films come to Criterion, or to just Blu-ray or DVD in general in the US. But I think political elements are making that difficult at the moment. So I'm just glad that we get this movie.
Yeah, and by the way, I would not call, I would call Certified Copy experimental. Like Someone in Love, less so.
Well, I forget the name of it, but there's one of his films is literally just women in Iran watching a movie, and you don't see the
Shirin,
movie. And
it's
Shirin. Yeah, shots of the women's faces as they're watching the movie. So Certified Copy is Guardians of the Galaxy compared to that.
Good. That's fair. Now, 10 has been rumored to come out on Criterion. I haven't seen that, so I've actually been waiting just in case.
It's really good.
I don't know if it's that's what I hear. I mean, that's earlier aughts, but... Anyway, speaking of things not coming to the Criterion Collection, but I think they're important enough to discuss, there's a Satan Tango. And by the way, is that how you pronounce that? I mean,
I think
phonetical,
it's Kiarostami.
Very good. Touche. Satan Tango by, and boy, I forgot the director's name.
Bellatar.
Hung up. Bellatar, of course, which I know you love, Matt. So it's his really 8 hours. And I think most people see this as his magnum opus. It's on the Sight and Sound list. It's on the They Shoot Pictures list. A lot of favorites, but I understand it's. And I haven't seen it because there hasn't been a good edition, an easy way to watch it. But I understand it's kind of up Bellatar's alley. Or if you've seen one, you've seen them all in a way. But I don't know. Have you guys seen this?
No, I haven't seen Satan Tango yet. I've only seen one of his movies, so I really want to check this out. Digging into this a little bit, it's interesting. It's being released by Arbelos, I believe it is, which is a new art house film distributor.
Right.
They're putting out Dennis Hopper's The Last Movie, too, so it looks like their new one in the game. I just started following them on Twitter, so nice to see someone new out there, probably, you know, just a pusher of films that we love. So nice to see.
Yeah. I guess I'd always prefer Criterion, but I also root for small companies. So
sure. Yeah. And I guess
good luck to you guys.
They
Arbelos.
Now have the distribution rights to, Funeral Parade of Roses as well, which, was just released.
I wondered about that
last year. And I don't know if they distributed that or if Cinelicious distributed it when it was in theaters,
right.
But that was a great movie, and I recommend that Blu-ray to everybody. who is into experimental film, as as Aaron pointed out. But it's a weird company, and I mean I don't know what the rights were for all of these Tartan films that went out of print on DVD, but the fact that they got this film seems like a huge coup for a small upstart like this.
Tartan,
for people that don't know, that was a really an Asian label, and they had a lot of obscure art house and actually some horror films, but I think a lot of those are gone now.
It's still on DVD. If you're region free, you can get it from Artificial Eye. It's like a 3-disc set, I think, from them. It's the only way.
You know, I'm okay waiting. One thing that's funny about Arbolos is you pull up their website and it's fine. It's just a decent presentation. It shows their upcoming releases, but it says full website coming soon. So they are a small company. But good luck to them. All right, well, let's do some short takes then. Talk about a recent Criterion we've seen. So, Mark, do you have one?
I do, and I feel like I've been talking about Agnès Varda too much, but, you know, this, especially for the French New Wave, I feel like 2017 has been the year of Varda with Faces Places, kind of like 2014 was the year of Godard with Goodbye to Language. You know, he was just there being talked about quite a bit, so... Faces Places is coming to Cohen Media March 6th. So nice to see. I think that was just released, announced this week.
Yep. And I've already pre-ordered.
Nice.
Only she also got an Oscar this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this could get nominated too. So
yeah, it would be great to see. I think it's coming locally here in Vermont in the next couple, just announced to probably be coming in February. So I'm looking forward to it. But, you know, I had to finally catch up with Vagabond because I was very slowly working my way through the 4 films box set. And so I felt like I couldn't put the box set back on the shelf without checking this out. And boy, am I glad I did.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of going in order. And this being 1985 film, it really feels like a culmination of what she's doing in her work. You could see the research that she did. I think it's, you know, she's known for being a mix of documentary and fiction, and I really like the way it came together in this film. I think the characters, they really care and they connect with Mona, although she may not connect with them. You don't know that much of her background, which is said at the beginning of the movie about, you know, how those that knew her before, are they actually thinking about her? But those that knew her late are thinking about her. So, you know, maybe her family's forgotten her, but those that she's run into, she's really had an effect on. So I like how, you know, and the camera is kind of like is like a police interview. But, you know, how would the police know who to talk to? You know, so they're talking to us as the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I just like the way, you know, that is played. So, yeah, I was definitely taken with this. I was really ready after watching this to shed my Criterion movies and go on a pilgrimage, at least for 1 hour. I would like to do that. But, yeah.
Yeah, watch Le Bonheur and get back to me. You might change your mind.
Yeah.
How's that performance, too, by Bonheur?
It's amazing. It makes me want to see the Pilaf film. That's
Anu Samore's
collection. Anu,
Yeah. She's it's younger. Well, actually, not that much younger than this, but yeah, she's good in that, too. Has she been doing much lately?
Not that I've seen. I didn't think to check, but...
Yeah, I don't know if it's made, if she's working. I don't know if it's made it over to the U.S. She was 17 when she made this movie, and it's in a remarkable performance. I love this movie so much, and your point about taking to the road, I think, is really gets to the heart of what this movie is about. It's about our own, you know, desire to do this, but our fear of what the actual reality would be, you know, and of course, you know, like, we love the people around us, we don't want to abandon them, but there is something so freeing and fascinating about what she does in this film. And I think by telling it through these other people, you really get at that. It's no longer about this one person, it's about all of us. And I think it's just such a remarkable movie.
Yeah,
I would love to see it again. Oh, and also, Bonheur, she is working, but she was in La Ceremony, or Ceremony. Sorry, I could do a little better than that. But Matt, do you have a short take for me?
I do, yeah. Well, I have been off spines for a while. I have watched a few of the Olympic sets, Olympic films, but other than that, it's been a while. I've been on a Naruse kick on the Criterion Channel recently. Mm-hmm. So I've been going through in chronological order all of his films that are on the site. And it's just a real pleasure. All of his 50s movies that I've gotten to so far have been really great. The last one that I watched, however, was Floating Clouds, which is Hideko Takamine, who's really excellent. It's about a couple who basically he's a married man, and they meet in French Indochina and Southeast Asia during the war and have an affair. And then it's about them sort of reconnecting when they're back in Japan after the war. And it is so brutally sad that I hesitate to recommend it to anybody. But the central performances are so wonderful. And the way that Naruse uses time and editing to kind of hit emotional notes is just, it's not manipulative at all. And it's just really beautiful and moving. And it's a really wonderful movie, and I can't wait to watch the last three of his that are on the service. I wish there was more Naruse available in the U.S., and there's only one on DVD in the main line, and then he has an Eclipse silent set, which I highly recommend to anybody as well. But we it would be really great to get more of him, because he really is on the level of Mizoguchi and Ozu in terms of what he's able to pull off in his films consistently.
Yeah, I think he's the really the forgotten Japanese auteur.
Certainly, but in the U.S.
Actually, in the U.K. too. I think we've talked about this before, but Masters of Cinema put out a DVD and it didn't sell well. So that's that's probably why we haven't seen much, because there was no market proven. I think if they'd put out a few more a couple years ago, when there seemed to be a little more buzz about him, it might have done better, but I think that's faded some. But yeah, I think he's his films are, it's very much like Ozu and Mizoguchi, very family stories. I like Sound of the Mountain a lot.
Yeah.
Although the one thing about his is I basically binge watched a lot of these films, so they kind of blend together after a while. Hopefully this won't be your result in a few years, but so I don't remember Floating Clouds as well, but Sound of the Mountain and Late Chrysanthemums are the two that that stood out to me. Anyway, my short take is actually, it's rare that I do this, but it's the one of the most recent releases that came out, which is John Ford's Young Mr. Lincoln from 1939, and I think I said a few weeks ago that I considered it lesser Ford, and I want to walk that back a little bit. I don't think... now, the thing is, it's not major Ford either. This is in the same year as Stagecoach, and I think Drums Along the Mohawk came out that year, which I would put both of those above this. I would say it's more middle Ford. I'd forgotten that it's easy to get caught up in the Henry Fonda, the oh gee golly kind of character he plays, which is often the kind of characters he played, except for Grapes of Wrath, where he's fantastic. He actually is pretty good in this film, and I think I'd forgotten how good he is. There also the narrative. It's, of course, it's going to be a little, heavy-handed and patriotic and sentimental towards Lincoln. You know, this came out right before World War II, and this also was in the studio system. It's not like they're going to make a a blemished portrait of Lincoln. There were some points that I thought were not very well punctuated, but still it was good. And it just as far as a courtroom drama, I think it works standalone just as a film. Even you take Lincoln out, and it's very similar to other good courtroom dramas of the time. I think it's really just the beginning and the end. There was a commentary on it, speaking of how those are coming back. So Joseph McBride, who is a big Ford and actually an Orson Welles scholar, he did the commentary, and I kind of sampled that, and it gave a little more context. I don't think I like it or appreciate it as much as him, but I do appreciate it more than I did a few weeks ago. So worth checking out again. Do you guys like Young Mr. Lincoln?
Yeah, yeah. I've seen it once, and you're mentioning the courtroom drama. I remember that really pulling me in, and I did like Fonda's performance from what I remember. Did you watch the Blu-ray, Aaron? I'm just curious how the restoration looked.
I did, and it looked fine, yeah. But I don't remember how the old one looked. And that's to our earlier conversation. It's sometimes tough to tell how much of an improvement you get from going from DVD to Blu-ray on these old black and white movies if the restoration's good and if you have an upscaled player. It's probably better than an Eclipse, but you're not going to see I don't think you'll see a John Ford Eclipse. I think most of those will go mainline. Shall we get into a little Filmstruck?
All right.
Sure.
Have a couple topics to talk about here. Well, really one and a half. So, Filmstruck is apparently coming to the UK or to Europe.
Big news.
Big news, yeah. And confusing news, too. Yeah. So apparently the deal is with Curzon. So those who don't know, Curzon is pretty much allied with Artificial Eye for home media, but they also do theatrical exhibitions, distribution. So what was absent from the reports is Criterion. And of course, Criterion has the UK brand, which I think still pumps out 2 a month, roughly, but we don't tend to talk about those. They're generally retreads of Sony releases that are already in existence. So it sounds like they're not involved in this, and it's just Filmstruck for the UK and for Europe. So Matt, any thoughts about this announcement?
I guess it'll make the comments on Filmstruck posts slightly more tolerable. There's still going to be Canadians, I guess, complaining.
Canadian and also PS4 or whatever device people.
No, I'm happy. I'm happy for anybody who gets this service. It's a great service. It will be interesting to see how, if at all, they'll incorporate any Criterion content into the site. And how this channel would work and what they would even have on it. Any sort of growth from the company ensures that it's going to continue to be around, which is good news for all of us.
Yeah. Good for Filmstruck. And of course, Filmstruck licenses a lot of films from other labels. So we see a lot of, we've probably seen Curzon films here in America. So it's possible they'll license out, maybe Young Mr. Lincoln to the UK. So, or Vagabond or something. Mark, do you have any thoughts about Euro Filmstruck?
Yeah, I just, it's always like you said, Matt, with the comments of not having Filmstruck, in other countries. I just love the fact that it's extending there, and some of our friends there will get this great service. I mean, it's more and more we're seeing content, we're getting more content, and also more streaming services. So the fact that we can give this to our our friends there is great. I just be curious to see what it looks like. It'd be great to be able to kind of import it and check it out ourselves here. But congratulations, UK.
Rights wise, we probably won't be that lucky. But please send us screenshots. Whoever, I know we have a lot of Euro listeners, so hopefully they'll share this with us or post them in the group, please. There was also a vague discussion about a little TCM project that I may or may not have seen, and I'm not going to say a word about. So I'm just going to ask you: is that cool?
Oh yeah.
Is that interesting? Yes. Okay. So anyway, Filmstruck, I'm just going to say that it might change tone a little bit. Maybe. I don't know. It's been hinted about that it could have some new content sections. So anyway, just go on the internet and look around. That's all I'm saying. And so let's talk about the Filmstruck groupings. So it's been 2 weeks. So we have two directors of the week. We have Alexander McKendrick and Jules Dassin, who are both just tremendous filmmakers, really among my favorites. So Mark, do you have any thoughts about, we'll go in order. How about McKendrick first?
I was actually just pulling it up again to try to remember, because I don't remember the name so much, but a couple of help me out with the films.
Sweet Smell of Success, oh, Lady Killers, yeah. The Man in the White Suit.
I think Sweet Smell may be the one that I've seen. I actually remember pairing that with I saw that and Kiss Me Deadly like back to back, and I think they were released around the same time, so I picked up both of those then. That's just a fantastic movie, another great digipack. So yeah, that's a nice
he
pairing.
Was part of the Ealing stable, so a lot of the Ealing films have their Studio Canal has the rights, so that's why like Whiskey Galore is a very good movie. It's available on Region B, but you won't see it here. And The Man in the White Suit is another one. You can't get that here. Matt McKendrick?
Yeah, I've only seen Lady Killers and Sweet Smell of Success, which are both really great. He's kind of like a workhorse kind of guy. He's like, you know, he puts out just solid product every time, you know, whether it sort of elevates itself to the greatest of all time is probably up for debate, but I think, you know, you're going to enjoy everything that you see from him.
Yeah, I think those two are his high points, and I'd say Sweet Smell of Success deserves to be in that conversation. Somebody was talking on Twitter about looking for biting dialogue and sharp biting, and I think that's like basically the go-to film. I think I recommended Naked as well for similar tone, but still, you can't compare with the dialogue in that film. But he made a Sweet Smell of Success in America, but he was British, and now the other director was American and went and made films in France. So Jules Dassin, very much in the Melville style of gangster, actually probably influenced Melville a good bit. But what do we think about Jules Dassin? I'll reverse it. Matt?
He's great. You know, all of his films that are in the collection are worth seeing. I think he made a lot of great films. I think his only sort of all-time masterpiece that I've seen is Rififi. And that is just an absolute must-see for anybody who likes film, period.
I agree.
The other three movies on this list that are not Criterion, I have not seen at all, and I'm very curious to check out, including two made during the war. So that should be pretty interesting. And then his later one is that was made, I assume, in France, stars Marcello Mastroianni. So that I'd never heard of that, so I'm definitely curious to check that out as well.
Mark, got any thoughts on Dassin?
I think Matt really hit the nail on the head just as far as everything is worth seeing that I've seen, and Rififi is the culmination of it's the best thing he's done. I kind of go back and forth with my favorite heist movie between that and the Red Circle, Le Cirque Rouge, but Rififi probably is it. So, yeah, it's nice to see a few here that aren't on Criterion that we can check out.
Yeah, and I forgot Night in the City, so I would put that in the conversation. I think that's an important noir film. And actually, he did a lot of great noir work.
Yeah.
I've seen all but two, and I think one of the ones that you hadn't seen is The Canterville Ghosts, which is okay. I remember being kind of disappointed by that. And I'd say some of his early noir, you know, the highs are pretty high, like Night in the City, and the lows are probably about mediocre. I remember I thought Brute Force was good, but not great.
Yeah.
And the Naked City the same way. I thought it didn't age as well. But and then they're doing a new star pieces. So they have Icons. They had two of them actually. Anna Magnani and Vanessa Redgrave. So two different stars, types of stars. So Redgrave, Mark.
Again, I don't know what I don't think I've seen anything from her, surprisingly. I know her
Blow
her
Up
dad is well known. Oh yeah, I've seen that. Okay.
Man for All Seasons.
Nope. Which I think that's the that was on Twilight Time, if I remember. I haven't
it
watched.
Was, yeah. She's done a lot of period pieces, but You probably have seen her in a lot, even if you don't remember. So Matt, do you got any Redgrave experience?
Yeah, I've seen a few of these. Most of them, like all the 90s stuff I've seen, it was when it came out, so I don't really remember any of
right.
it. Blow Up is great, of course. A Man for All Seasons is kind of boring, I don't know, for me.
Oh, Matt, wow.
She doesn't excite me as an actress. I find her good in good movies and sort of unmemorable in unmemorable movies. But, you know, I mean, I know I'm in the minority on that. So that's just one man's opinion.
Later work.
One man's opinion.
Yeah, Atonement is fabulous.
Yeah, Atonement is really great.
Well, I think the next one will be up your alley. Anna Magnani is big in Italian neorealism. So, of course, Rome Open City, I mean, that might be one of the most iconic female performances in film history. I mean, it's in the conversation.
Yeah. Wow.
And then she's done a lot of other Italian films. She's done some French films. The Golden Coach is a big one. And just a lot of great work, period. So, Matt, we'll start with you this time. Magnani?
Yeah, she's a force. I mean, she's really, really great. I'm not a huge Pasolini fan, but Mamma Roma gets by for me just on her performance alone. She's just so so powerful in it. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see all of the different major directors that she worked with in this list.
Yeah.
And in not just from one country, from all over, Italy, France, America, with Lumet for Fugitive Kind. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a career that she put together, and you know, well deserving. And she's one of those people that is just her magnetism on screen, you just don't want to take your eyes off of her, because she's just has this real passion.
Yeah, I think if you just removed everything but Rome Open City, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
That's enough.
But and the other like main channel curation is Black in America, and so we're all three white guys, so I think we can fairly say we have no idea how that relates, but I'm trying to find the grouping. That's one thing Filmstruck, sometimes they cycle through pretty quick.
Yeah, as far as grab them. It's Black Like Me, Black Roots, Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, You Gotta Move, and Neshoba, The Price of Freedom. I've all films I haven't seen or really heard of, sadly.
Yeah, me too.
I've seen Black Like Me. It's very dated, but it's an interesting sort of sociological portrait of 1964, either the society that it's depicting, but also just the society that made that film and sort of the tone of it. I'm really fascinated by Black Roots. I'm hoping to get to that soon. It's a documentary about famous Black people just basically like talking about their experience in the U.S. as Black Americans. I mean, I assume they put this up because it's because of the Martin Luther King holiday. But I am very pleased to see them continue to put up collections like this, like the LGBT collection that just went off was really superb, great curated list of films. And so that kind of makes me want to trust them in this collection as well, because I don't know a lot of these movies, and just I hope they continue to do collections like this, because it's the kind of stuff that you don't get on normal streaming services and that doesn't really have a big enough audience to get solid releases on disc. So it's really great to see them continue to do stuff like this.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move to the Criterion Channel. There's a lot here, so I haven't done this in a while. I'm going to go ahead and do speed round. So are we okay with speed round for some of these heavy topics?
Definitely.
Let's do it. I thought it was gone forever. All
right. Yeah, it felt like it for a while. I guess we just needed a reason. So, all right, well, I'm going to have to kind of abbreviate. I'm just going to cut the shorts out. So sorry, short filmmakers. I do love you, but all right, speed round begins now. All right, Robert Bresson, Mark.
He's good.
Matt.
He's Catholic, right?
Together by Lucas Moodysson, Matt.
Never seen it.
I haven't seen it. I saw Uncle Yanko, the Varda film, but that it's paired with, but not together.
Oh, right. We should not cut Varda from these. Prick Up Your Ears, Mark, by Stephen Frears. Oh, it rhymes.
Watched some Frears recently, but no, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, me neither. Mark, Matt?
Yeah, this is one of his that's fallen through my fingers. He's made so many movies that it would just be, you know, hard to have seen them all.
Yeah, we've talked about him a lot, so I won't say anything else. I mean, just over the last several shows. Digital Spines, we have 322, The Complete Mr. Arcaden. I believe that's how you pronounce it. Mark,
I have.
What do you think of it?
It's a brick of a release I have on my shelf and haven't watched yet.
Matt?
I enjoyed getting through that release, but it's a lot to take in if you don't respond to the movie because there's so much content.
Yes, it's a chore, so I I will put it off for another day, or I will put off finishing that release another day. The Piano Teacher, Matt.
I was sort of dreading watching this. I didn't love the other Hanukkahs that I've seen, and I was blown away by it. I thought it was just a real work of art, very complex and alive.
All right,
yeah,
Mark.
Definitely one of his best. I've seen it once, and it's hard to make the time to pick it up, but a great performance.
Yeah. Definitely very alive and very visceral. So, Mark, The Lure.
The Lure. Don't give up on this one. It's a 2017 U.S. release. It's fun and great soundtrack.
Matt.
I agree. The soundtrack's great. I think that she reached for more than she's able to accomplish for her first film, but that's okay because she'll get better and her movies will be interesting continually.
Yeah, let's stick to just two genres instead of 18 next time, but I've shared my thoughts. Double features, Gimme Shelter, Matt.
Great movie, you know, the Stones. It's everybody should see it.
Yeah, really
Mark,
good documentary for sure.
I think we've talked about this film on half of all of our shows. It just keeps coming up. So this is Spinal Tap, Mark.
It's funny. I didn't get it the first time. It's hilarious. Watch it again. It's great.
Matt.
I didn't get it the first 50 times, so I had to watch it another 50. should I say that out of a scale of 1 to 10, I give it an 11? Or is that joke banned from all conversations forever?
It's banned now. Thanks, Matt. You just killed it. That was the last time that joke can be used. It's an out-of-print title, so it's that's special. Hopefully this means something, but it doesn't. The next one is, I'll just do both of them, Cat People and Curse of the Cat People. So, Matt.
I've seen Cat People. It's great. I wish they'd included Curse of the Cat People on the disc. I haven't seen the second one.
It's really good. I wish that too, but hopefully it's coming.
Yes.
Mark?
So I watched the more recent one too. So different from it, but really great. Black
the Schrader?
Film. Yeah.
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 Oh, right,
I like
right.
That one too.
And then there was Split Screen Season 10. I've ghosted the previous nine, so I'll just throw it out there. Jump Ball. Anything?
I think I'm going to start watching in Season 10. Do I need to know what happened in the first nine seasons?
Yeah, it's just like The Wire. Speed Round Over. Not going to start Split Screen. How many are there?
You mean seasons?
Got to be...
Oh.
Yeah, somebody tell me, because I gotta know when I'm going to stop throwing it out there and getting no response. That's important to me. All right, that's the show. Way to end it. So, Piece of Flair, singular, one piece of flair. Mark, what's your piece of flair? Actually, it can be more than
you. I have a way to package mine. It's just I wanted to very briefly plug some 2017 films that you can easily stream but are worth seeing but probably won't make my best of list, my top 10. That is A Quiet Passion, the Terrence Davies film, is on Prime. You can also see Marjorie Prime, which is a lesser-known movie, great performance from Lois Smith, that I think will cater to folks like the two of you. Some will call it pretentious, but really liked it. That's on Prime. And then I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore was great up until the last kind of the ending. That's on Netflix. Macon Blair directed. It does feel, it's great. I really liked it. Great performance from Elijah Wood. So wanted to plug some 2017 releases that you can stream and are well worth your time.
Cool. I've been meaning to watch A Quiet Passion for a while, but meaning and watching is not the same thing.
Beautiful light and great performances. Yep.
That's what I hear. Matt, Got a piece of flair?
I do, yeah. I want to give a shout out to the UK, where the 2018 is the year of Clouseau. There are no less than 5 Clouseau movies coming out on Blu-ray in the next 2 months. They're Le Corbeau, Quite des... I'm not even going to pronounce how that name. I'm going to toss it over to Aaron for the rolled R's. The Prisoners and Inferno and The Mystery of Picasso across Studio Canal and Arrow, and I think Masters of Cinema is doing Inferno. And they just released Murderer Lives at 21 last year. So that's 6 Clouseaus within the span of 6 or 8 months on Blu-ray, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. Plus, BFI is putting out the new 4K restoration of Wages of Fear, which was, unlike Wings of Desire, not the strongest Criterion Blu-ray, so there is room for improvement there. So that's really exciting for anybody who's into the French Hitchcock. It's great to see more of his movies being put out, including his more interesting stuff like Inferno, which is not fully complete, and The Mystery of Picasso, which is very unusual for him. It's a documentary mm-hmm. of Picasso basically making a work of art on a piece of glass. So it's exciting, and everybody should check out all those movies because they are super awesome, but especially Le Corbeau, which I think is a masterpiece on the level of Wages of Fear and Diabolique.
Yeah, they did this last year with Jacques Becker.
Yeah.
Becker. So anytime they do these groupings of director, I prefer when they do them by director. That way you can just kind of bunch them up. But yeah, a couple of those are out of print because of Studio Canal. So if you want to support that with your money, that's up to you. But they're pretty good releases. So I'm intrigued by all of them. Speaking of French directors, my piece of flair is the Romare Arrow set. I wouldn't say binging. I've watched a couple of those, actually 3 of those, and I'm preparing for our next Arrow Now episode, which is actually going to be recorded next week. So that's something to look out for, or maybe not. And I'll just say that Eric Rohmer is one of those rare directors that can basically fill a movie with dialogue and have it work. You know, we were talking about Sweet Smell of Success earlier, which is another dialogue-driven movie. His are tonally very different, but he kind of gets to universal truths and gets into philosophy and ethics, but without being too heady. It's more introspective, a lot of young characters, and I think he uses those for his voice, and it's kind of a voice of naivety and discovery. So really, really enjoying the Romare set. It doesn't have his big ones like the Moral Tales or the Seasons, so I'm hopeful that in some way, shape, or form those will come out elsewhere. But if you like Arrow, it's only Region B, so that's it. So that's the show, guys. Where can people find you online, Mark?
Twitter at Mark Herney, H-U-R-N-E, and Letterboxd at same place, M. Herney.
And what about you, Mr. Gasteyer?
I'm on Twitter and Letterboxd at Matthew E.G. And you can also follow the Complete Podcast, which is the podcast that I'm doing with my friend Travis to cover Stanley Kubrick's filmography. And we're going to do 2001, as I mentioned, in the next couple mm-hmm. weeks. And you can find that at The Complete Pod on Twitter.
Recommend. So I'm at AWES505 on Twitter. The show is at the Criterion Now Facebook group, really. You can find us on the Criterion Cast Master Feed or at CriterionCast.com. And thanks, gentlemen, for talking Criterion.
Oh, thanks for having us. It's a blast, as always. Love talking to you, too, gentlemen.